This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we've got a special guest for you. We're joined by an actor and musician, Darren Dower. Darren, how's it going?
It's going great, Walter. How's it going out there in radio and show and podcast land?
It's going great. It's another amazing day. It's actually pretty hot here today in Memphis. So that's something normal for Memphis winters. We always have mild to humid winters, and so it's 70 degrees here today. So
you're in one of my favorite towns, man. I remember a long time ago I did a Broadway show, and when we went on tour, we actually went through the Orpheum Theater there, and it was just so phenomenal being in Memphis for a week.
Absolutely, yeah. There's so much history here. It's a town with rich history and culture, and it's just amazing here. There's it's got its issues. There, no city is perfect, but overall, there's a lot going on here. A lot still going on here, which is just awesome.
Yeah, it's good to hear, man. I can't wait to get back there. Hopefully, with the film, we're planning kind of a little micro tour as a test, where we're going to show the film and then do a concert after it. Who knows? Maybe Memphis will end up being one of the cities the producers pick out.
Yes, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. The birthplace of blues and rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's one of my favorite places, man. EP.
Absolutely. So, Darren, you are a jack of all trades. I mean, you're an actor. You've also done some producing, and you're a musician. You're the front man for Paul Revere and the Raiders. And a lot of people don't know this, but you were actually a guitarist for the Backstreet Boys for a little while. So tell me, I guess, what got you interested in the world of entertainment? Was show business something that you always knew you wanted to do? Is it something that you kind of naturally gravitated towards?
Yeah, my entire family were all musicians. My mother was a singer. My dad was a singer. Had a record out in the 60s. My uncles and aunts, grandparents, go way back. We're related to the Carters and Cashes, and the Goldens. So, we've got this rich musical tradition in the family. Of course, none of us really know each other because we're spread out all over the world. But I actually tried not to be a musician, to be totally honest with you, Walter. Music is a really hard life. I saw the struggles that my parents went through to pay the bills every month while trying to play music. And, breaks up families, a lot of alcohol abuse, things like that. So I actually tried to be an athlete. I was a runner, and I was a kickboxer when I was a very young guy. And although I did play and sing since pretty much coming out of the womb, honestly, I really did. I picked up the guitar at 8 years old and started playing. And because of a sports injury, being laid up in high school when I was a sophomore, I could barely walk because I ripped a hamstring in a football game. And so I picked up the guitar. My mother literally forced me to enter the high school talent contest because I had nothing else that I could do. And she was sick of seeing me laying around. So I entered this talent contest, ended up winning the darn thing, had no idea, that I was even capable of doing that. Yeah, I believe to this day my trophy is still in the wall. I think I'm the only sophomore that's ever won that contest in Seabreeze High School in Daytona Beach.
Wow, that's crazy. That is crazy.
It was crazy.
Do you ever look back and kind of wish that your sports career would have worked out, that you would have, been more successful at sports rather than music?
Sometimes I do, because I was so serious about it. I was one of those guys that, it was pathetic how into it I was. It was my whole existence. Unfortunately, being raised by a single mom back in the early 80s, I didn't know anything about nutrition, and that's why I was getting, I was getting injuries. I was doing the training, but I wasn't feeding the body. And one of the guys that I actually trained with a martial arts teacher named Daniel Pye, who is a very famous martial arts teacher. Don the Dragon Wilson also trained with Danny, and Don became an 11-time world champion kickboxer. You know, we had the same school. Yeah, and he's a great guy. Don is a wonderful, wonderful guy and just a great fighter. And, yeah, I do. Sometimes I do because I was, you know, in eighth grade, I ran the third fastest time for what they call the junior athletes in the state of Florida, you know, for the 100-meter run, and I was serious about the kickboxing. And I do. Sometimes I do look back and go, man, what would have happened if I'd have done that and gone through college and did this, that, and the other thing? But, you know, I've had a great ride, man. I can't complain. I've had so much fun. I've worked with 15, 20 legendary music acts. I was there at the beginning of Backstreet. I saw them, you know, from their little blossom when they were first put together. I've done movies. I've worked with Will Smith, Billy Bob Thornton, you know. So although I do regret it at times, there are other times I go, wow, what a ride this has been.
Absolutely, absolutely. What would you say that you, I guess, enjoy the most? Because I know that you've done both film and as well as music, and you know you're most notable for your music. But out of the two, is there, I guess, a vehicle that you like more so one than the other?
Boy, that's like saying, do you like Miss Universe or Miss Hawaiian Tropic better? I don't know, man. You know, they're both different, but they're both really awesome. And I think I'd have to say I like them both equally. I mean, I really do get an unbelievable high performing music on stage. I mean, when you play rock and roll, I mean, it's one of the greatest highs you can get. But then walking on a movie set, regardless of the capacity, whether I'm an actor or director or screenwriter, there's something about being on a movie set that is so magical. I think what I like the most is doing both together. Yeah, I love them both. I think the reason I love filmmaking so much is I call it 360-degree creativity. I love to write, I love to play music, and I love to act. And I found that I even now love to direct, which I never pictured myself as a director because I was so into performing. But directing is an amazing creative job that until you've done it, it's even hard to explain how unbelievably satisfying it is.
Wow, that's something because I've always wondered how that is because, of course, going from, like, an actor to, like, a director, you know, that's such a huge leap because, you're basically, you're behind the camera, but you're still heavily influencing the film, you know what I mean? Because I guess the picture that you want to see is what you're trying to convey to the audience and the message that you want your movie to have.
That's absolutely right. The trick to directing and you can tell when you see movies and you see, you know, it's a bad movie or there are bad actors that don't quite do it. The trick to a movie is hiring the right talented people because as a director, it is your vision. And I had to get my vision on that screen the way I want it to. I have to hire the best actors and the best crew that I can so that I can concentrate on being a director because a lot of people think directors are telling actors what to do on stage. And in a real, real low-budget bad film, that's exactly what they're doing because you got a bunch of people that can't act. But when you hire actors that know their craft and they know how to communicate with you and you've got a crew that also is in that same, like, communication zone, that is when you make a great movie. And you don't need a lot of money to make a great movie. You just need talented people. One of the highest-grossing movies of all time was made on a video camera for less than $20,000, and people forget about that.
Man,
so
I often forget about that as well. I mean, it's so easy to do, you know, because we're used to, you know, the Michael Bays and so on and so forth with the, you know, huge explosions and stuff. But yeah, sometimes like less is more, and I think we forget about that a lot of times.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The soul of any project is the talent behind it, and then you can put a lot of fancy stuff around it. You can put icing on the cupcake. But if the cupcake's terrible, the icing's only going to help you for a minute or two.
Yeah. Right. You're so right. You're so right. So you've done a wide array of films. I mean, you were in Eagle Eye, Hancock, and then you've been in a slew of other films. What genres of film do you enjoy the most? And when you're approached about a script, a certain script, whether it be acting or directing, is there a particular thing that you look for in that script?
Yeah, there is. You know, it's again, it goes back to the soul of the story. A story, it's hard to explain, but when you read scripts, especially if you're a guy who's just a director who reads lots of scripts because you're looking for that right story to make, I've not been that guy. I've been fortunate enough to make my own stuff other than, well, that's not true. I directed Christmas in Hollywood and Grace of the Father, too. But what it really boils down to is when you read the script, it's just like when you listen to a good song on the radio, does it touch you? And, you know, you have to be, you have to have your mind open and your creative juices free so that you can know, and your emotions have to be, you know, in the right spot. So when you read something, does it bring a tear to your eye? Does it make you gut laugh? Does it make you angry? Does it make you scared? And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a script that does that. And I'll tell you, if you've ever read a script, scripts aren't like a book. There's no definitive terms in there. You're getting a paragraph that says interior, movie house, night. A guy walks into a room, and then you have your dialogue. That's pretty much the description you get. So
guys who
can write, yeah, there's nothing in there, man. A guy who can write a good script is an amazingly talented person, and that's why they make the money they do.
Holy crap. So I know I sound really ignorant. Please forgive me. But so with scripting, you really have to, like, breathe life into this, I'm guessing. Like, you have to – because – from the way you're making it sound, it can be oftentimes very bare bones, you know, like you've got the scene and then the dialogue. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you really have to make, you know, make this film believable. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? It's up to the director and the writer and the actors to literally bring the story to the script, because as a director, when an actor reads a part, I've got something definite in mind that I'm looking for. And sometimes I'll get something completely different that takes me down another road, and I'll go with it if the talent's strong enough. But most of the time, you've got the movie envisioned in your mind, the entire movie from frame one to the end frame. And then as you audition actors and everybody you're going to have involved, you look for who can bring it to the table. Because an actor, you know, I taught acting for 20 years, and people think that actors just get on sets and deliver lines. That's absolutely not true. You know, a good actor will sit down and write a 30-page background on the character they're going to play. They'll create a history for that character. They'll create personality traits.
Wow. Man. That is...
Yeah. The good stuff you see, like in Forrest Gump, all that little fine-tuning that Tom Hanks did for that character, that all came from Tom Hanks, not the writing.
Holy crap. There's so much you don't know, and I think as an average moviegoer, you know, people a lot of times they'll do this thing where, you know, like they basically try to downplay like what a person has done. Like they'll say stuff like, "Oh, acting is just a grown up pretend," you know, grown up make believe. You know, how hard can it be? But there's so much more to it from what you're saying. Yeah, like there's so much more than just memorizing your lines. I mean, you're essentially creating these people. You're making a fictional character believable. You're making a fictional character come to life. That's huge.
That is absolutely true. And it's from the way he breathes to he walks, how he goes to the bathroom, how does he read his newspaper. Yeah, it's one of the hardest jobs you'll ever love to do because – and you know it. As a moviegoer, you know it. When you watch a movie, instantly upon an actor opening their mouth, you know if they're a good actor or not. They're either real or they're not. And I don't know about you, man, but I can be watching a really great movie. Oh, The Last Godfather is a good example of this. And the movie can just be spectacular, everything. Then one bad actor can ruin the whole thing.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. I mean, it just takes you – you're already in this – suspension of disbelief mode, then you go into this suspension of disbelief, but I don't believe anything mode because somebody just blew the third and fourth wall out of the water.
Right. Man, you're so right. You're so right. You're so right. Do you remember your first film? I know because you've done so many films. But do you remember your very first one? What were your emotions like doing that? Were you afraid? Were you nervous? How was your first film, your very first one?
Boy, let me think back on that. Well, the very first thing I ever did was I did a little tiny role on a soap opera way back in the 80s. I can't remember that very much. It was so small a part, and I didn't really like the part. I'll tell you, when it really triggered to me was when I was in 1990, I was in Orlando. I'd just come off a Broadway show. I moved back to Orlando, which was a big mistake. And I thought Orlando was going to be the next Hollywood, and it really just never happened.
Yeah, I know. Florida.
Oh, I really did. I got there were like two TV shows. I did them both, ran out of money, and went, oh, what do I do now? And but there was a show, a television show called The Adventures of Superboy that I did. And so we'll call that my first television show because As the World Turns, I only had a couple of lines. But it was a great experience, As the World Turns. Don't get me wrong. It was awesome. I got to romance three of the female leads, so that was not a bad thing for a 20-year-old guy. But I remember walking on the set, and they read me for the part, and I had to play the leader of a Nazi group, so it was a really intense role. It was – the only word I can use is magical. When I walked onto that set – because the first time when I did As the World Turns, we were on the beach with a camera and a mic. It wasn't like a real set. But when we did The Adventures of Superboy, I walked onto Universal Studios lot, and they had this huge set built, and these, and then we shot all over, you know, Central Florida. But I walked on, and I saw that $100,000 camera, and I saw the $200,000 in lights, the 30-person crew, makeup people going to it. I was in heaven, man. It was such a magical, a movie set for someone who really, truly loves making movies is absolute magic while you're on this planet.
I bet, man, I bet. It's so being on set like that, is it, what would you say? I'm sure it's very inundating, but it's probably, like you said, it's also a dream come true, I'd imagine.
It was an absolute dream come true. I mean, when you land a role, and a lot of people don't realize this, you know, there are a lot of people that get famous by luck, and once you're famous, that's it. If you have some talent, you can ride the wave for a while. I mean, you've seen a lot of famous people. They get famous, and then they keep trying, and they eventually fall off because the talent's just not there.
Right.
Like I'll give you an example of how magical it is. When you land a role, it's like winning the Super Bowl. There are 50,000 actors in L.A. every day that want 1,500 roles. There are only 1,500 roles a day, and there are 50,000 people in this town trying to get those roles. 400 agents, each has about 300 clients. So when you land a role, it is like in acting, it's like winning the Super Bowl. You need to go out, have a dinner with your friends, have a drink, invite everybody you know over for a party because it is truly a major accomplishment when you land a role. I still teach an acting class for kids every week, and from the very beginning, I tell them how hard this business is. I want the ones that don't think they can do it to just go ahead and quit because it's frustrating. And it's hard work, and the gratification comes very seldom. And then when I landed this, I did this movie Hancock a few years ago, and it was like, you know, I knew it was a $100 million movie because it was Will Smith. And when they called, it was the weirdest thing in the world because I was so excited when I got the phone call, hey, I'm calling you about Hancock. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. Well, it was Central Casting. And Central Casting is an agency that does background actors here in L.A., which is a very, very nice job for certain people to get started. But I wasn't doing background acting. You know, I was past that. And so I told them, I said, guys, I don't do background acting. I said, I'm out there for parts. And it was the weirdest thing I've ever had. They said, well, Peter Berg, the director, handpicked you for this role. He wants you to come on, signed on as a background actor, but he's probably going to upgrade you on the set because he's done that with three other people. And what they're doing is they don't know if there's room for the dialogue. So against my better judgment, I took this background job. And within 15 minutes of being there, Peter Berg walks up to me. You know, he's a monster director. He says, Darren, come on over here. And so he puts a chair next to Will Smith and the director's stand. Jason Bateman, Will Smith, myself, Peter Berg, the producers. And so I went from standing in the background area, and all these background guys are watching me going, what in the world? And then they walked me over and put me in the director's tent with Will Smith for 3 days. And I'll tell you, that was just like, I felt I had arrived at that moment because I was on a $100 million movie sitting in the director's tent with Will Smith and the director.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that must have been so amazing because, I mean, it's not every day that you meet Will Smith. Peter Berg is like a huge, huge actor. I mean, director. He's, you know, directed so many great films.
And then Jason Bateman is hilarious. So that must have been, I mean, I can only imagine. I feel like I'm right there with you. Like,
we just laughed for 3 days, man. It was unbelievable. It was great. Jason Bateman is the funniest dude. He just kept us laughing. And Will Smith, oh, my Lord. Will is the nicest guy I think I've ever met on a set. He's that cool. Him and the two nicest guys I've ever met on the set, and you didn't even ask this question. I'm going to go three. James Caan, Will Smith, and, oh, gosh, I'm losing this other actor's name. James always plays the bad guy. Huge actor. I can't think of his name right now, but they were all just so gracious, so real, down to earth. You know, Will Smith was just the best, man. He gave me a big old hug and welcomed me to the set. And Will walks over in the middle of the sun, stands with the background actors out in the sun and talks to them for 45 minutes to make them feel welcome. I mean, he's really a super guy.
Wow. That's, man, that's awesome. Because, I mean, there's so many, like, actors and people in Hollywood, and I know that you've run into this, and they're not very humble. They're not very down to earth. And so to hear stories about, you know, some of your favorite actors and, you know, people in celebrity roles that are, you know, that are kind and humble and outgoing, you know, it's really, I guess, eye-opening and just really cool to see, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to run into it because, believe me, in Hollywood, you run into the opposite quite often.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to talk with you about your newest film, and I think it's so cool. Is it? I mean, I don't want to be. I hope I'm not speaking out of place or anything, but is this kind of like, I guess, like a parody of your own life? rock and roll movie.
Well, it's funny. I never really thought of it as a parody of my own life. I really thought of it as just a great story, a underdog story where instead of a boxer, you've got a musician. You know, it's Rocky, except Rocky's a beer belly drunken fool. But but the more I think back on it, I'm watching it going, gosh, you know, I do mirror this guy quite a bit. I mean, you know, I was an 80s musician. I'm still a musician, but I mean, I started in the 80s, and I never got that big 80s record contract, you know, because I was out making a living. I chose to hit the road, make a living, have a great time rather than, you know, chase the record deal. And I did really well, but, you know, I never landed that big deal. And then, so there are certain, you know, there were a lot of women, there were a lot of parties, there were a lot of, you know, just great times, man. Young guys out playing rock and roll, having great times. Innocent as could be, but just, you know, tearing the world up. And, yeah, I guess I do. I guess Steve Taylor, there's a lot of me in Steve Taylor. Now, I took some of the best attributes from some of the top rock stars in the world. I mean, Steven Tyler, obviously Steven Tyler, there's some irony there, you know, because Steven Tyler is one of my favorite rock stars. That's why the guy's name is Steve Taylor. But, I mean, I took stuff from Bowie, Skinner, Aerosmith, Beatles. I took little things, little traits, and I put them all into this character. If he was just, I wanted to make him the absolute biggest loser that I could, with one of the most unique day jobs in the world, if you will, and then I wanted to make an underdog story, but I wanted to do something that nobody else had done, and that's kind of what we did.
Absolutely. What was it like for you, I guess, making this film? I know that this is something that's very near and dear to your heart, and it's actually the release date is coming very, very soon. But personally speaking, what was it like for you creating this film, and what do you, I guess, look forward to most with its release?
Well, you know, my life has been, I love comedy, I love music, I love to laugh, and I love, one of the greatest feelings you'll ever have in the world is, you know, when you first start playing music, you play it for the accolades, the girls, the blah, 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 the feeling of being on stage. And then one day, I forget exactly who it was, one of the entertainers I always worked with, big, big entertainer, he said, you know, my favorite part of this job is taking these people out of their normal, everyday, pretty much boring lives for a couple of hours and letting them feel what I feel on stage. And that opened my eyes to what we're really doing up there. You know, entertainers, I never thought of myself as doing a service as an entertainer. It was pretty self-gratifying. I mean, I was up there for myself. I'm not lying to anybody. But then when you think of it that way, there's a great joy and going on stage and looking out in that audience. And I'll tell you, when you first walk out, everybody has this confused look on their face, like, what am I going to see? But when you see people start to relax, you see their eyes open up and their faces start to smile, and you realize, yeah, that guy in the front row probably just had his mom die. That guy over there probably just lost his job. That woman, maybe she's ill. That person back there may have just lost a friend. This guy's job is really, really hard, and he's stressed out all the time. When you see all these people from normal everyday life completely relax, and then they lock with you, they lock onto this vibration, this feeling of just goodness, and they're being entertained and they're letting go of their woes, it might be the greatest thing that I've ever done in my life. Is once I realized I was doing that, then I started looking at entertainment a little differently. I took it a lot more seriously, and I realized that my job up there is to let these people have 2 hours off from the world and live their dream for a minute, and that's kind of what I try to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're so right. You get on so many good things there. I mean, it's like, yeah, you just really, really touched on so many things. Because you're right. I mean, it's like, it kind of leads into that thing, like, every minute of life touches another, you know, and it's true. You know what I mean? You think that you're just doing the job, but I mean, there's just so much more to it. You know what I mean? So much more to it. And it's like, you don't realize the lives that you're touching, the people that you're inspiring up and uplifting by doing this craft that you do, until, you know, the end of the day. And sometimes you never know, but you got to go by, you know, go on faith that, you know, what you're doing matters, and that, you know, you're influencing, you know, people of all generations, which is really cool.
And, you know, people who rent the movie will be doing the same thing for me, because, you know, I am the epitome of the independent filmmaker. This film is independent from A to Z. I'm up against all the movies in the theaters. I'm up against all the movies that have these studio backings, big money, and things like that. You know, we're starting from scratch. We started the old-fashioned way, organically. So everybody that rents this movie is helping independent film, truly helping independent film move on, because we're going to make more movies, and we're going to encourage other independent filmmakers. And people, you know, Rock and Roll the Movie is a silly little comedy. You know, I mean, let's be honest. It's, you know, when my first film school teacher said, Darren, when you make your first movie, you won't have a lot of money or a star. You're going to need comedy, rock and roll, or breasts. That's what he said. Those were his exact words. So I put all three in this movie. I was like, well, if I need one of those three things, I'm going to put all three of them in there. But, you know, the whole idea of the movie is just, it's fun. It takes me back to the Kentucky Fried movie days when I was a kid, or Airplane, or, you know, there's some silliness to it, but yet there's a really good underdog story going on. There are some beautiful, beautiful women. I think we have some of the most beautiful, now up-and-coming women in this movie that any movie's ever had. I truly do. I mean, I have a range of beauties in this movie, and they're scantily clad, but yet it's all in good taste and fun. And, you know, we tried to do things that were silly. Like, you know, the movie is about a guy who, you know, he has this relationship with all these porn stars in the daytime, and then he plays rock and roll at night. So yeah, it was so funny at the auditions, because all these girls showed up to audition for these porn stars. And I remember we had this one really big porn star. She's got like 20 million followers. Her name is Alexis Amore, and she's just the sweetest girl in the world. You know, I'd only met a couple of porn stars in my day, you know, and so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if she'd walk on stage being a diva or what she'd be. But she, you know, she basically did the movie for nothing. I mean, I think we paid her $100 for the day, because she just wanted to get into the regular market. She wanted to have something fun off course from what she normally does. And so she walks on stage, and you have to understand, this girl's not a 10. Well, none of the girls in my movie were 10. They were 11. They were all so incredibly beautiful.
Wow.
And then Alexis and these other women, you know, the female producer on, she goes, ladies, you know, we're sorry, but you realize this is a role for a porn star. And here I'm a guy sitting in this room with all women casting directors. And he says, okay, we need to show the director what we've got. And on that cue, 12 of the most beautiful, unbelievably well-shaped women that you've ever even dreamed of just all took off all their clothes.
Holy crap.
And I'm sitting there going, and then the producer looks at me and she goes, now you have to make the choice. And I was like, oh, no, that's not right.
Wow.
So, you know, we ended up using almost all the girls in these little flashy scenes. And Alexis, of course, does this completely cameo where she flashes the camera, you know, with these, you know, this beautiful body of hers. But it's all in such good fun, you know, and fun. It's all in good taste. It's all in fun. It's all in the part of the story. So, you know, I've got people who've seen the movie, some of the older crowd, you know, who follow my music go, well, you know, maybe this movie's not for me. But then I've got a demographic of 18 to 70 that love this movie because it is about an 80s rocker who comes back and does good in today's music. So pretty much what I'm saying, Walter, is making this movie was an awful lot of fun.
I see. Holy crap.
It was incredible.
Man, that is awesome. That is awesome. Well, Darren, I know that, you know, in addition to this film, you know, that you know, is about to come out, you still play with, or still serve as a front man for Paul Revere and the Raiders. What are you guys working on currently that you can tell us about?
Well, we're not really doing any new recording projects or anything. You know, we kind of had an agreement that when Paul passed away a couple of years ago, we were going to keep doing the band as is, keep the memories alive, and then we would branch out from there to do new projects because, you know, we just don't want to change what Paul Revere and the Raiders was. And so we're doing we do about 50 concerts a year on average. We're leaving in a week or so for the – you know, we host the annual rock and roll cruise on Princess Cruises. It's this, their largest ship. It's packed to the gills. There's six bands. You know, we're the host band for that cruise, have been for 27 years. And so we're getting ready to leave and do that. And then we've got some concerts. We got Milwaukee, Florida, New York, all this great stuff coming up. I've been contacted lately about a possible documentary they might want to do on the evolution of the group from the 70s when Mark Lindsay left the group. You know, they're real curious as to how the group survived, you know, losing the lead singer and all that. So we've got that in the works. But I think for the most part, Paul Revere and the Raiders are just going to travel around and do great shows when they come in. And then the rest of us, like myself, you know, I've got my film company. I own Rocking and Rolling Films. I've got a small recording company. I'm now producing my daughter, Raina Dowler, who's a 12-year-old, like, prodigy singer. You can look her up on the Internet, R-A-I-N-I, Raina Dowler. She was just in one of the largest videos of the year, the Michael Jackson Heal the World video, prodigy video. I've got a restaurant that I own at the beach in a little town called Playa Del Rey, California, called the Mad Carrot. You know, years ago, I couldn't get good food on the road, so I made it a promise that I was going to create a place that would be the ultimate, you know, cool health food restaurant, you know, good, healthy, clean food with natural juices and stuff. So we got that going on. So, you know, there's a lot happening. I have a solo CD I just released. It's weird. I've been a rock and blues singer my whole life, but being from a Southern rock background, it was kind of a natural progression to do some Southern rock and country stuff. So I just did a crossover record. There's a song in there you should check out. It's called Goodnight America. And it is a huge American ballad. It's kind of like a God Bless USA. And it just hit Sirius Radio. So we're thinking there's a possibility the song might take off. And as a matter of fact, my phone, this is a true story. So I'm sitting in my car with my daughter at school the other morning and my phone rings. And I look at the caller ID, and the caller ID says Donald Trump.
What?
I'm not kidding. I stored it because I was so blown away. My daughter and I looked at each other like, what?
I believe you. That's crazy.
Oh, man. Well, I guess for the inauguration, they're looking for entertainers and songs. So, you know, I don't know if we'll get in the inauguration. I don't know if my song will be part of it or not. You know, I said, it just came out of the blue. But I guess we're, you know, there's like 100 songs, 100 entertainers they're considering. So just the fact that his office picked up the phone and called and said, hey, we just wanted you to know we're considering your song for the inauguration. I was like, oh, my gosh. I didn't expect that.
Absolutely. Man, that's crazy.
You know what's crazy, though? The whole craziest part about it is that Donald Trump has his caller ID says Donald Trump.
Yeah. But, you know, I totally see that, you know what I mean? Because it's like he wants people to know it. You know, I could totally see it, you know what I mean? He's, you know, just it matches up with his personality. So.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. You're absolutely, that's an absolute correct assumption right there. I couldn't believe, though. You should have saw the look on my daughter's face. I was afraid to answer the phone at first. I was like, what in the world could this be?
Right. Man, that's freaking crazy.
Oh, man.
Well, Darren, this has been such a great interview. I want to thank you so much for just taking time out of your schedule to do this interview with me. And I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
Yeah, I just want to ask everybody, go on Amazon, go on iTunes, look up Rock and Roll, the movie with Darren Dowler. Please rent, buy, share, do whatever you can with this movie. We need to get to about 1 million rentals and views, and once we do, we're going to be able to start making more movies. And, you know, basically what we're doing in the independent film world, guys, is we're telling the big guys, you don't control the film industry or what goes out to the people anymore. They control it. So support independent film. Please support independent music. You know, don't download music and films for free, because every time you do that, there's a musician and an actor and a director who can't pay their rent. Understand that when you go to work every day, you want to get paid. Well, the only way artists get paid is if people buy their art. And because of this ridiculous Napster thing that happened and the politicians going along with it, musicians, creative people are getting ripped off. I'm not going to name them. I know two huge stars who live down here at the beach in California who are broke because they can't get the royalties anymore. They're broke. They've lost their homes. They're big stars. And out of respect, I won't name them. But, you know, so folks, support independent music. Support Rock and Roll, the movie. If you want to see a couple of my other films, I have a Christmas film out called Christmas in Hollywood with Key Largo's Bertie Higgins. And I have a movie coming out next July, a wonderful faith-based film called Grace of the Father, directed and written by Dee Miller out of Southern Florida. So, you know, just keep punching Darren Dowler into the Google search bar and see what comes up. As long as you don't see my face on a wanted poster, I think all is good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And my last question is where can our listeners follow you and find out more about you? Because I know you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter. Where can they find out more about you and follow you?
The best place to go for me is go to my website, darrendowler.com, which is going to have a lot of changes coming up in the next few weeks. We're getting ready to revamp the whole site. We're going to have clips of the movies I'm doing on there. Also, go to Facebook, you know, my Darren Dowler Music, not the Darren Dowler page. That's my personal page that's going to fill up too fast, and I won't be able to talk to anybody. Go to the Darren Dowler Music page because it's got unlimited fan potential, and I monitor my own pages. I write to my own fans. I answer my own emails at this point. So anybody wants to ask me a question or wants to say something, please just chime in. I really enjoy interaction with my fans. I know a lot of stars say that, but you've met them at shows and they don't. I truly do. I am building a community of people from the ground up, kind of like what you're doing, Walter. I'm doing it organically. I don't want fake likes. I don't want fake Twitter feeds. That's why you'll see people look at my Twitter and my Facebook, and they go, gosh, his Facebook page is only have 5,000 or 6,000 people. I find that strange. The reason that's strange is I only want people who are truly interested in my music and what I'm doing on my pages. I'm not spending $500 a month to buy 10,000 likes. I don't want fake people on my pages. I want to build a community of people who are interested in independent film and music, and I want to converse with you guys. So that's kind of what I'm all about.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the way to do it, Darren. And, I mean, you hit on so many good things. I mean, what I like most about you is, like, you're very down-to-earth, you're relatable, and your passion, you know, exudes, you know, just like we've never met, but I can just tell, like, you're just a genuine person, and I think that that's the biggest thing, you know, the most incredible thing about you. So,
well, I appreciate that, Walter. I'm back at you, buddy. It's been a real pleasure interviewing with you, and I want you to know that I appreciate every second that you've given me in the film. And anytime you want to talk to me again, you now have my number. You just give me a call.
Absolutely, yes, sir. Will do. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Walter. We'll see you Rock and Roll the Movie, everybody.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Rock and Roll the Movie. Make sure to download it, guys. The right way. Go ahead and purchase it. It's a great film. I've seen the screener, and I didn't know the backstory about the girls. That's cool. So that makes it even more cool. It's a great, great, great film. You guys won't be disappointed. I'll say that.
Well, thanks again, Walter. I appreciate it. Have a great one, everybody.
All right. Take care, Darren. Guys, that was actor and musician Darren Dowler. You can check out the link to his website. We'll put it in the body of this post. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, hit the subscribe button. We're also on your iOS device. If you've got an Apple product of any sort, you can listen to our show by downloading the Stitcher Smart Radio app. It's available for free. Download the app, search for show name, Redefining the Counterculture, and you'll hear this interview with Darren. Android users have no fear. We're also available if you've got an Android device. You can listen to us via the Google Play Store. Search Google Play Music. Search for show name Redefining the Counterculture, and you can actually stream this interview, download it all free of charge. Lastly, if you've got a Roku television, we're available Roku player. All you've got to do is download the iTunes app to your Roku TV or Roku device. And once you download the iTunes app, download our search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture, and you'll hear this interview with Darren. And it's you can listen to over 200-plus hours of original content, interviews, and programming, all free of charge.
This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.